nothing, looking up at the cheek, got a nice back of jar. Edit.
4, 2.
It's time for your Sunrise Guys.
I'm not arguing that our package is the best, although I think we do have a very strong package to offer.
Dirt and Sprague.
We have the best package.
Every time I get excited.
Andy Dirt Johnson. Brandon Sprague.
I'm not fourth fiddle. I want to be number one.
It works.
Dirt and Sprague.
When you're about to get freaky at night, you think about it.
On the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. Loaded second hour. About ready to start it here in just a second. Look at us, huh? Almost 2 on the clock.
Right on the dot. Take that, Bram, man.
Happy 7 a.m. to everybody out there. Hope your Memorial Day weekend was good. And it's nice to have everybody back on a Tuesday edition. It's a Mail Sack Tuesday. We'll get to the Mail Sack in the final hour of the radio program. 503-864-6326 is where you can send your Sparta TRT Mail Sack questions. So if you need to,
bring your ass.
Bring your ass and your questions. Before we start the second hour of the radio program, I want to remind you, because we only have a couple left, that on June 23rd, Todia presents the Fan Golf Classic out at Langdon Farms. Afternoon round sold out, and there's just 2 foursomes available for the morning round, so we have just 2 left. Got to get them done. Come on, let's come hang out. Have a good time. We'll be hanging out at the infamous Angels Envy Bourbon Par 3 6th hole. We'll all be eating Matt's Barbecue. You can head to 1051thefan.com and click on the Fan Golf Classic logo for info and to sign up today. The Fan Golf Classic presented by Toyota is also brought to you by Vulcan Design and Construction, Henderson and Daughter Windows and Doors, George McCoy at Warren Allen Attorneys at Law, Battery Exchange, Maestro Dobel Tequila, Lorehurst Market Steakhouse and Butcher Shop, Philbrook Law, 1-800-DIVORCE, Roto-Rooter, Illegal Mezcal, Pub Beer Cheap Fun, and Window Nation. 1051thefan.com.
Almost sold out. Let's make it happen, everybody.
It is almost sold out. A lot to talk about in the second hour of the radio program, but of things I gathered over the weekend of notes to talk about on the show, I wanted to talk about our local team, just because we've talked about the NBA Finals, and we've got 2 juggernauts in the West, and they got the Knicks over there in the East. They punched their ticket yesterday. And, you know, it's kind of an interesting spot the Blazers sit in. They don't have a coach.
You missed the Jeff Van Gundy news on Friday. You didn't get to talk about old Jeff Van Gundy.
What do you mean?
Well, you weren't here, were you? Didn't that happen on Thursday?
His name's been out there. I talked about that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I didn't remember seeing that until Thursday. I don't remember talking about that on the show.
Well, Haynes had announced that he was a finalist, but his name was in the rumor mill stuff. Haynes said he was a finalist.
I don't remember talking about that at all until Friday.
But yeah, so we got the list of guys out there now, and it's is kind of a mixed bag of reporting. You got Jeff Van Gundy.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Tiago Splitter, somehow still in it.
Still in the mix.
I was told that he was disrespected too much. He didn't want it.
No, he won't touch it. But
there was no way you could do Tiago like that. He's out. He's done. The whole coaching community will turn their back on the Blazers.
He also did an interview where he was like, yeah, I mean, I get it. He's a new owner. He's learning about the NBA. He's casting a wide net. I understand where he's coming from. That was literally his quote this weekend.
That's not what I've been told.
No.
I've been told the coaching community was not going to take the job.
No.
Because of how cheap and disrespectful he was
to Tiago
Splitter.
It's all going to crash and burn. It's all over. The Kalamazoo Blazers are screwed.
If Tiago takes the job, did he take it for $1 million?
Ooh, that would technically be a pay raise from where he was at last year.
I mean, is that the conclusion we come away with?
I had a funny back and forth with the old orangutan after the show on Friday because we were talking about coaching searches or Deering. I can't remember what happened, but when you're out and the idea of cheap assistants because a random Utah guy or Boston guy get thrown out there, and I've never heard of half these coaches.
Mike Williams is the Utah guy.
He's
and
one of them.
Tyler Lashbrook.
Yes. Yes, thank you. That's
the
Boston
guy.
And the idea of like a cheap head coach, and I just chuckled and I thought, how do you feel about Tiago Splitter right now? A lot of people want him to get the job, right? You know how much Tiago Splitter was making last year? Less than $1 million.
$900K, $800K.
I don't know if we know specifically, but that's the rumored amount. So it is possible to feel good about a coach and win a decent amount of games paying him less than $1 million.
That is a very good
because
point.
Because now we're advocating for him to get the job.
Playoffs.
And now everybody told me he did a great job coaching. And I understand a lot of it. And some of it I questioned because of the schedule and who they beat in the second half.
Yeah.
But you felt like he was a great coach. He was making $900,000. It was an elite assistant. So, you know, the idea that you got to, you know, can't hire a cheap coach because it won't work out for you. It doesn't really stand on its own 2 legs.
So Tyler Lashbrook is another one. Mike Williams, an assistant. Both are assistants in Boston and Utah. And then Jerry Stackhouse's name popped up. He had left Golden State with Terry Stotts. His name popped up. Mike Inouye from Minnesota is still one of the finalists, and old basketball friend of ours that used to be on the broadcast, Jeff Van Gundy.
Jeff Van Gundy is still my vote, just from an entertainment
perspective. You want
JVG? Just from an entertainment perspective, it would be glorious. He would be funny to listen to in press conferences. I have no clue how it would work, but I also, the bigger question to me continues to be the roster. I don't really care that much about who they hire. I think anybody, depending on what you do in the offseason, can either succeed or fail based on what you have around him and the talent he has to work with. But yeah, dude, I the Jeff Van Gundy thing would be hilarious, and I'm rooting for it to happen.
One league source labeled Dundon's approach objectionable,
of course,
according to the Oregonian, because they reported the article of who the candidates were.
What about it is objectionable?
Well, talking to
coaches, can't
the
talk.
Sixth assistant on a Utah team.
Can't do that.
Well, he shouldn't be a finalist.
Well, he hasn't hired anybody yet. We also don't really know specifically. These are just rumored things. We don't really know exactly who the finalists are.
Look, much like people like
they
to tell
did a thing,
you,
by the way, real quickly with Jeff Van Gundy.
Yeah,
the way go back and read the tweet from Haynes. They are seeking permission to interview Jeff Van Gundy,
but he's a finalist.
He's a finalist for the job.
Yeah.
So he's a finalist before interviewing for the job.
I also noticed that.
Okay, I'm just asking questions out loud here, because that doesn't make any sense. Interviewing him makes a lot of sense. How is he a finalist if he is not interviewed for the job yet?
Officially interviewed. That's different than, hey, Jeff, it's Tom.
There are sharks swirling in the water, and every time there's a drop of blood that you can glom onto something with Tom Dundon, they're taking advantage of it, and it's just nauseating.
It's obviously a thing that people are doing right now, finding any and every possible thing, but... What was I saying? Ah, damn it. You made
I'm
me
sorry.
Lose my thought.
I'm sorry. The Van Gundy thing I needed to bring up. Because I laughed out loud seeing that. Well, I think I might have brought that up on Friday. I can't remember, but it just is hilarious.
I think the important thing to me is like Jeff Van Gundy be a big name, right? Like, oh my God, Jeff Van Gundy, who just got back into coaching because they ended his broadcasting career.
Has he been in the Clippers 2 years as an assistant?
I think this was his second year.
Second year, okay.
I think his second season. Stackhouse, no thank you. I have no interest. He's not been good anywhere he's been. I'm not interested. Lashbrook and Williams, I don't know. Mike Inouye, I don't really know. Tiago Splitter, I'm more familiar with. My whole thing on this is what you just said. And I continue to circle back. It is the easiest thing is to be one of those feeder fish that latch onto the shark and just follow that, right? The coaching. Who's going to be the coach? The bigger thing here is the roster decisions.
Yes, I don't care who your coach is. If you don't make a move to get better, you're not going anywhere next year.
Jeff Van Gundy, Jerry Stackhouse, Mike Inouye, do the LeBron meme with the cigarette in your mouth. It didn't really matter. Like, if the roster is not upgraded, none of this matters.
No.
I don't care how good, smart, stupid, whatever the person is, they will not win at a level we want if the roster is not somewhat overhauled, tweaked, and made better. It just doesn't matter.
90% of winning in the NBA is who you have on the floor on any given night. 90% of it.
I go a little lower than that, but sure. Yes, to what you're saying, we largely do agree with this. The roster is the more important thing here. Like, I'm interested to see who they hire, but like,
sure,
to the level of, this is objectionable what they're doing. Oh, how dare he hire the fifth assistant of the Utah Jazz, Jeff Van Gundy, so old. Like, none of that matters. It's the roster. You idiots, it's all roster-based. If Joe Cronin's only move is, I'm going to let Matisse Thybulle walk, then none of this matters. They're going to be a 7 seed again, and they're going to lose in the first round.
Yes, it doesn't matter if Tiago Splitter is your head coach or not. And I would argue if that's your offseason, there might be a little regression because there's not going to be as many tanking teams in the NBA next year. And so your schedule, just on the surface, is already going to be more challenging because there's not a race to the bottom like we haven't seen in a generation in that league. So it's funny. It feels like we've lost the plot a little bit again. Like, this goes back to one of those moments that I chuckle about the idea of where the organization has been, and I constantly bring up this was the equivalent of the debates we were having with the firing of Terry Stotts after getting bounced by Denver in the first round despite Dame's historical performance. And this idea is, if you can go out and change coaches and it's going to fix everything when you have 3 guards in your starting lineup all under the size of 6'3", and the next year was a disaster and then Neil Olshey eventually got fired. But it just, like, why are we blaming the coach for this? You've built a roster that cannot win at the highest level. That's the problem. It's not Stotts' fault that they're bad defensively when you have Dame, CJ, and Norman Powell in your starting lineup. This is a roster management thing. And so while the coach debate is certainly fun, there are names that are more interesting to me than others. My main hope is that they hire somebody who makes a decent amount of money just so that whole nonsense argument goes out the window, that he's not trying to pay to win or he doesn't want to pay a coach. Or like, that's my only hope out of this. Outside of that, who the name ends up being doesn't really matter that much to me, because I think you see time and time and time and time and time again in the NBA, Steve Kerr's making $15 million this year. How many games did the Warriors win?
Yeah, they didn't make the playoffs.
Okay, so when Steve Kerr doesn't have Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and they're not winning 73 games, like, he's still making $15 million and they're not making the playoffs because he doesn't have what he needs from a roster standpoint. That is ultimately what matters the most, and we're going to yell about who a coach is going to be for another week or two. I'm sure this process will drag out a little bit. There's no need to make a hire right now. You got to want to have one before the draft night as you lead into that. So I think in the next week or two, hopefully, we'll get some sort of an announcement. But I again feel like we're focusing on the wrong thing that matters more this offseason, and that is, what are the moves? How aggressive are you going to be? Who are the big fish you can go after? Is there a big star that you can bring in? Like, that's the stuff that ultimately matters more than whether you're paying a guy $1.8 or $2.2 million, whether he's the fifth assistant or the second assistant.
Yeah.
Because if he doesn't have talent, he's not going to win, no matter how high up or low down he is.
Denny Avdia did not make All-NBA.
No, he did not.
Thoughts on that?
Not surprised by it. I mean, he certainly had a deserving candidacy. It was not one that I was ever going to yell about.
Like, who would you take off? Here's your third team, right? Because he was never going to make first or second.
He was the highest vote getter of anybody who didn't make a team, if I read that correctly.
Yeah, he was just on the outside looking in. But here's your third team. Tyrese Maxey, Jamal Murray, Jalen Johnson, Jalen Duren, and Chet Holmgren.
Yeah, I mean, the difficulty of it is if you had a positionless, All-NBA team, it would make a little bit more sense, but that's not necessarily the way that it always works. If you want to take somebody,
that is the case.
Is it positionless now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, they got away from. I felt like it was always done on a position.
Well, you get
basis.
People that dig Vote their heels for, down and do it traditionally.
I want a center, a power forward, a small forward, a shooting guard,
and
a point guard.
I think they were trying to find a way to put, like, back when Embiid and Jokic would be MVP.
Yeah.
Have them both on the first team.
Basically say you can't punish both of them so they
can
beat.
Well, I know a while ago, it used to be, like, two guards, two forwards,
yes,
and two
Yes, that's
center.
The way it always worked,
And when centers were dominant in the NBA, you'd be a third, like...
Shaq is a third team all guy,
Patrick
and Hakeem.
Ewing
and,
was the third team center or something. Right. You're like...
What? You're also splitting hairs. Like, how do you define Chet Holmgren?
Yeah.
Well, he's a four because Hartenstein.
Exactly. Like, so then they just went to... I thought they went to just front court and back court.
Yeah, that's what they did.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can do multiple
if
you need to, but...
I'm okay if you want to flip him off for some of those guys or interchange him.
The only one I would go and parse the numbers and just based on this season would be Jamal Murray. He did not have... his greatest season, if memory.
He went absolutely
he went
insane
on a run.
When Jokic went down for
his injury. He went on a run, but I think he was dinged up for a while, too.
He had a pretty good year. I think you're thinking of the playoffs. His playoff run
No, I know
terrible.
The playoffs.
He played 75 games. He averaged 25 points, 7 assists, and 4.5 rebounds.
He kind of went nuclear once
Jokic
went
Jokic
down.
Yeah, when Jokic went out, he carried him
Shot
for a bit.
Shot 43.5% from three.
Yeah.
That's a good clip right there.
Yeah, if anybody you want to debate on this, and I wouldn't, because Duren was so bad in the playoffs, but
again, it's a regular season award. You got to separate the two.
And then Holmgren was best defensive player in the league behind Wimby.
I have no issue with
it.
I'm not going to yell about
it. No.
If you wanted to take one of those guys off and put them on, I'm okay with it. Duren or Holmgren or one of the others, like, all right, I'll listen to the argument. I'm not outraged by it. He was unbelievable this year. He was an all-star. He had the best season that we've seen from a Blazer since, prime Dame before he left. But it's that just shows you how difficult it is. And it might have saved the Blazers a little bit of money, depending on how next season goes.
What did you call Bill Orme earlier? Mr. Wants to Move the Team?
Mr. Mover of the Team.
Mr. Wants to Move the Team. I'm going to text him. Hey, that's your new nickname.
Hey, this is what calling you on the streets, Bill.
He'd probably get all pissed off at you for it. But he did a Q&A with Dundon. You got another Dundon interview here.
He flew out to Raleigh to watch game two that they won game two. And then I don't know if anybody saw, but they won game three of the Eastern Conference Finals.
They're pretty
good
in overtime.
They're now two wins away from going to a Stanley Cup final. Yeah, pretty good.
Are we ever going to get him on the radio station? He's doing interviews.
I would guess.
I think we have two shows reaching out to him.
Maybe after, after like draft time. I don't know what his calendar's probably a little discombobulated. Like Orem flew out to go see him in Raleigh.
Yeah.
This was, I'm coming to you.
So did the game over pod. I know Rich Paul's an agent and a massive mover and shaker.
I think that's why he did it.
Yeah, no, that's, I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah, I'd love to get him on. I just love that he's talking.
Yeah.
And, people might not like the answers at all times, but I love that there's There's a consistent stream of communication coming from him.
Orem asks how he reconciles success in Raleigh with the way he's been treated so far in Portland and having proof of concept in one place but people still being skeptical in the other. He said the world tends to want to highlight or look for problems. I don't know if that's more pronounced in Portland or not. Clearly, I'm doing stuff and people have that perception of me. It would be crazy if I didn't think about what my role is in it. But it is strange to think that I was able to figure out how to build a bunch of successful businesses, employ thousands and thousands of people, then buy a hockey team, have some success, then the going in assumption is different than the way I see it. I have to think that's why that's happened. Maybe it's human nature to want to focus on the wrong things sometimes, and that's something I can't do anything about.
I mean, it's a good answer, and it's something that we've brought up repeatedly over the last however many months. I don't understand how... I get that it's not a direct apples-to-apples comparison, but as an ownership goes, anybody who follows hockey can tell you what the Carolina Hurricanes were for a decade prior to him showing up and what they've been since he arrived and how consistently they have won and now again two wins away from a Stanley Cup. So you can tell me it's not a 1+1=2 correlation of you won in the NHL to the NBA. That's fine. I grant that. They're different leagues, different sports, different players, different payrolls, all of that. You cannot sit here and tell me that he doesn't know what he's doing and he's cost-cutting at every turn in Carolina to the detriment of the team, because that's just simply not the case.
Yeah, Orem walked around, I guess, before, I think it would have been game three, and was like...
Game two.
Yeah. Thank you. And interviewed people and was like, hey, how do you feel about Tom Dundon? And it was a complete, like, 180 from us. It was awesome. This has been great. He's changed our community.
Go back and look what they all said when he took over the team. It was the same stuff that we were saying.
Fear-mongering.
He's going to move it to Houston. He fired their longtime TV play-by-play guy. This guy's going to cheat. He's going, oh, no.
Well, and there's still people that, you know, Furness, I know, is one of these guys of like, this is a slime ball. I don't trust anything he does. Even to this day, despite Carolina maybe being on the doorstep of getting to the Stanley Cup. So you're not going to change how people feel about a guy when he makes decisions that he makes, especially with those kind of moves.
Mm-hmm.
But Orem basically asked about the staff reduction. My computer just froze, so it's perfect timing in the middle of a segment. Odyssey Portland.
See if I can go pull it up.
I got it right here.
Okay.
So bear with me. He was asked basically about the staff reductions in Portland.
Yeah.
And his quote, they have twice as many people as we have in Carolina, and my experience is that less layers give people more accountability and they do a better job. Then you know that you're getting a great job done and you don't end up in the situation where many companies end up, which is everyone's looking around for somebody else to do it, complaining about what's fair and not fair. I've seen the job done really well with a lot of accountability, no drama, and a lot of, honestly, happiness. People are happier when they're busy and productive. That is the way I think things should be done, and more people just create more problems usually. I think Portland just had too many people. I just asked them to look at it, and I think they came to the same conclusion. We didn't run a budget or give them a goal, and now my computer is frozen and I can't scroll down, but basically summoning the effect
he
of
he didn't
like,
say go fire this many people to save this much money.
Now,
he said we need to trim.
You can certainly say, you believe that? And I can say, I don't know. I'm just reading the quote, but his thing was, we basically did not give them a specific mandate of headcount or budget. He just said, like, let's save some money here and let's really, do we need X, Y, and Z?
Yeah.
They evaluated and those are the cuts that they made. You don't have to believe that. Nope. I'm just reading the quote.
And very few people were on the basketball side of it. Almost overwhelmingly, it was a business side. And it just, look, it goes back to the same stuff we've said. This is kind of the difficulty with Dundon, is it feels like we're rehashing the same stuff almost over and over again.
No, I just wanted to read the latest
quotes. I'm glad that you did, but it just, again, it's like, it's my opinion hasn't changed. It's the idea of you had the largest payroll and the largest employee base of any NBA team and the lowest in revenue.
Yeah, that's a pretty straightforward.
Anybody with a business brain can tell you that doesn't work and it doesn't make a lot of sense. And it's not like everything's been hunky-dory on the business side where we're lowest in sponsorships and ticket sales of the NBA.
Yeah.
Or one of the lowest. I can't remember exactly what the stats are to the Oregonian article that came out when all those folks got let go, unfortunately. And again, you don't want people to lose their jobs, but how does that connect? How does that work? Like, mm-hmm. Did you really think that wasn't going to change no matter who the ownership change was? The Allen family made cuts multiple times over the years. We know multiple people who have been fired by the Allen family. So this is a thing that happens in professional sports, and it's terrible that people lose their job. But him doing that was never a shock. And I do take him a little bit at face value there. I don't think there was a specific number that they wanted to get under budget-wise, because that will always change based on the revenue that you're bringing in. It's more about how do we just get this down to a more manageable number of workforce and see where we go from there.
So he was asked about the arena situation in Raleigh versus what he's gone through already in Portland. And he said, it seems like Portland's more political. It's more emotional. It's a more emotional subject. And he's 100% right on that.
Yes, he is.
Carolina has a fund to bring sporting events to the state. There's a lot of businesses moving in. They're lowering their income tax. They're doing a lot of things. They're in a different place in terms of economic development. He said, when I first got to Portland, it was suggested they need a new arena. When I looked at it and said, well, the only way they could do a new arena is if they raise taxes, and I don't think they should raise taxes. It would be counterintuitive to raise taxes in a place that, for us to be successful, we need business climate to improve. Yeah. I think this was one of the more interesting answers to me.
Yes.
Of, you may not like the way he's doing all of the things, but what's fascinating is, in a city that is really struggling, we're coming up with stupid legislative ideas of how to treat businesses in downtown. Like, oh, you don't have a tenant? You're getting taxed for that. It's like, right. What? Why would you do that?
Right.
He is somebody that's really like, how do we make this better in total? And not just me. Obviously, I want to reap the rewards of some of this.
Of course.
But he's basically looking at through a lens of, the city needs to do well for us to do well. And I think that's an interesting point of view that, obviously, we all, I think, know that, but it doesn't get talked about because, to your point, when we talk about this, it tends to be T-shirts.
It's the same stuff over
staff
and over
cuts,
again. Yes.
And, you know, it's the same three or four things. Objectionable coaching hire practices.
That he hasn't actually hired a coach yet.
Yeah, all of that stuff. It doesn't tend to be, hey, maybe this guy actually, the business community could benefit in some ways,
yeah,
because it is important for the team to have good business relationships in the city and not be last in revenue.
I thought it was a great point, and one of the bigger takeaways for me was the idea, we don't need a new arena because it's not going to work from a tax standpoint. How do we get enough funding to make the arena as modern as we possibly can and then go from there? And it was a bit of a breath of fresh air instead of seeing an owner saying, no, I want a new $3 billion stadium, please.
He was also asked if anybody's reached out on behalf of other markets that might want the Blazers to relocate. He said, quote, I haven't talked to anybody else.
Yeah. Not even Kalamazoo? The Kazoos?
The Kazoos have
the
not
Kazoos
called
have not
on
called?
Him yet.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
This is very interesting.
Give
like
me time.
I remember Clay Bennett. Mm-hmm. I don't want to memory hole that.
This arena that he owned in Oklahoma City?
Well, that in like very roundabout, vague ways of answering questions, and that's just like, no, I haven't talked to anybody.
Yeah. This is, let's get the funding done. If it doesn't, then we're going to have to figure out some stuff here. But until that decision has been made, like, it's a non-starter.
Which he basically admitted. He's like, if the funding comes through, it's a done deal, and we can move forward and
yes,
get it all figured
let's
out.
Sign a lease, and we're good to go. That story dies.
For the rest
now,
of our
let's go
careers.
Hire a coach for $7 million and let that one die, too. Please, for the love of God.
Actually, I want Tiago to get the job.
It would
be the
back?
Funniest outcome. I was
it
told
would be really funny.
Multiple times to my face, Tiago would never take that job. He's been way too disrespected.
Yeah. I'm still on Team Jeff Van Gundy.
JVG.
I'm still on JVG.
A lot more to get into in the second hour of the radio program. Dirt and Sprague, we roll on 105.1 The Fan. All right, it's a Mail Sack Tuesday, so get those Mail Sack questions in at the Fan text line, 503-864-6326. That's the Sparta TRT
Mail Sack
that we'll get to in the final hour. It's nice to have everybody back on a Tuesday. Hope your extended vacation was nice, relaxing.
God, that third day is incredible, is it not? I mean, I know you have four, but that idea on a Sunday of not having the wait a minute. It's like a Saturday.
You don't really get the scary Mondays either.
No.
Like by mid to late Monday, you're kind of in
like,
the,
all right, I'm ready.
I'm good
back.
Enough.
Yeah.
That was good enough. I'm ready to get back into it.
Had my breather. I had my time
yeah.
off. Got things done that I needed to. Had my downtime.
I know.
I'm ready to go back to work.
I love the, when a team makes the championship and they haven't made it or they haven't been in a long time, the laundry list of stuff. Have you guys seen the Knicks one?
No, 1999.
So this is more of a, I think, everybody's going to, the iPhone, the iPod. They're going to just name off every.
Oh, we do the time capsule from 1999.
What was number one on the TRL list?
Here's something better that I think is more in line with how everything is going in society. Gas was $1.11 a gallon.
Don't worry, the war's coming to an end, man.
We got a great deal.
We're going to open up the street. You mean the one that was already open? Close it, open it. I don't know.
I had somebody bring that up. I hope we get that deal done today. And I was like, oh, we got a new deadline for the deal? The new deal? Is this a new deal?
The deal we already
when
had?
The last deal? Yeah. I don't even know what deal we're on anymore.
Get the f*** out of here.
$1.11 a gallon is insane to think about, isn't it? How
life
much
used to
better?
Be a little bit easier, didn't it?
Oh, my God. Think about your life right now with your truck.
How much money I would save. $109 last time I filled up my gas tank.
Dude.
A lot of people complaining about that 4 years ago that aren't complaining anymore. What happened?
I might pivot out of being a soy boy. I might go get me a Tundra, man. We get a big ass truck.
You're driving a raised up diesel truck now for $1 a gallon.
Dozen eggs, 95 cents.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Sub a dollar.
I mean, the chickens got really expensive. To be fair, those chickens.
Yeah, they're clucking,
you know,
dude.
You got to paint their nails. It's all fang, dude. They're manicured.
How about this one? Talk about a time capsule. Median U.S. home price: $158,700. I remember grabbing flyers.
Boomers ain't moving off those houses, man.
We used to grab flyers in our neighborhood in Park Rose, uh-huh. And we just, you know, walking through and you'd see, oh, we just want to check out the house without going in.
Sure.
So you'd get the flyer, right? And you'd always see the price and it'd be like 140, 135, 150.
Ooh.
Whoa, this house is kind of big.
Can you even buy a plot of land in the surrounding area for less than $200,000 right now?
I mean, if you can, it's a terrible piece of land that you need to hire.
Yeah, to clean it
like
up.
Like an excavation and company to come in and flatten it and make it so you can have a house on it. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was under 11,000.
Yeah.
What's it at now?
Oh, God, I don't know.
What's the Dow? Because the Dow tells me all I need to know about the economy.
Where's my stocks app? I don't know where my stocks app is. I'm fine.
All right. Well, we know that number is much higher.
It's much higher than that.
Netflix was just mail order.
Yeah.
Much like a Russian bride.
Used to have those at my 7-Eleven in the neighborhood.
The euro was 5 months old. That's insane.
It's a later invention.
And cell phones didn't have GPS.
No, they didn't. You used to have to print out your directions with MapQuest if you needed a way, or use an old, use the old map.
That's the best one that I saw, and that's from Alicia Jessup on social media.
Wait till the next time we go to an NBA Finals. What was the price of everything in 1992? A little bit cheaper.
Damn, dude.
House price, $17.
What was gas 7 years prior to the Knicks in 99?
Let me see the average gas price in 1990.
What would you guess? 88 cents?
95 cents a gallon.
You think it was 95? So in 7 years, it only jumped, what would that be,
1992,
cents?
The average retail price for a gallon of regular gasoline in the United States was $1.13.
Oh.
$1.13.
In 92?
In 1992.
Look at us, yes. 99, knocking it down 2 cents.
It did. It went down a little bit.
How about that?
Might have been the Gulf War might have had something to do with that. You know, yeah, we were also in a war in the Middle East in 1992. So.
Well, you know, there's any decade you could point to. We've been in the Middle East.
Yeah,
just give us 10 years or more.
Something going on over there.
We'll find a way back over there. Got to get all those people freedom, you know.
That's right.
Did you see the unfortunate curse of the fan?
No, I didn't. What happened? Who got cursed?
Well, unfortunately, Phil Neville got cursed by being on 105.1 The
Fan. Yeah, our guy got canned this weekend. I was bummed about that. I know the Timber fans were probably not bummed because I think they've wanted him out for a while.
Here's my question on Timber fans.
He just seemed like a good chap. You know, he seemed like a good dude.
You know Portland.
I know.
Enjoyed our conversation.
In my brief 15-minute conversation with him, he seemed like a lovely individual, and he invited us down to play golf in Palm Springs.
I think he'll have more time to do
got
that.
A lot of time for
maybe
that
we
now.
Can still play golf with him in Palm Springs.
Here's my question for Timber fans, not knowing much about the team. I've been following. I haven't been watching, per se. My Premier League season is finally over.
Yeah, they got smoked again on Saturday.
I watched my team's final match from the beach house in my jersey. We had a push with Bournemouth. Swag Spurs avoided
Spurs
relegation.
Avoided disaster.
West Ham.
Inspired effort.
No one
See you
cares.
Later. But that being said, I've seen that they've been terrible.
Yeah.
Swag asked a really good question. Who hires a coach/manager first? The Timbers or the Blazers?
Ooh. How does this usually work in soccer?
Well, it's unique.
Like, did they go interim guy?
They did not initially name an interim person. Now, you have a unique situation because they are on break. So there's 3 weeks where everybody's
right.
gone.
They're going to hire out.
Are they not? Are they done now on break? The break is
yes.
here?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they have 3 weeks where you can't have any contact with nobody can practice, nobody can train, nobody can do anything.
It's World Cup break.
So in 3 weeks, your players that are not involved on World Cup teams can start training again, but the next game's not till the middle of July. high.
Well, so my team,
that is very unique. That's interesting. It makes sense to fire him now. You got some time to
figure it out. So I'm not surprised. You know, they had a poor effort against San Jose and lost, and they're not. You know, they're what two teams from the bottom of the conference. So
yeah, 3-1.
But I think they have a similar roster issue as the Blazers are dealing with. It's like, what do you honestly expect them to do with a lot of youth and inconsistency and injuries and whatever else? So
I think that's the thing is, like, in baseball, your baseball team is this way. They've been terrible.
Yeah, absolutely terrible.
But they also hired a manager with zero big league experience coming from college.
They did.
And he's got a very different approach to it. He's kind of a bro-y guy, younger, and the Giants are terrible. Is it his fault? Or does the roster suck?
There's always a combination to a certain extent, but I largely blame the roster and guys underwhelming. Guys that you have on big contracts not performing, like, that's an issue for
you. I think hockey, it's very unique in this way. I think hockey, baseball, basketball, and soccer are all the same level of, well, what's your roster? Football roster is important, but we've also seen the benefits of great coaching.
You can coach your way around it.
Look what Torts did with Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good example.
Vegas got hired 2 weeks before the end of the season, and they were scuffling.
They're up 3-0 on the Avalanche right now in the conference finals.
And he's like 18-4-1 since he took over.
But he's been fired like 18 times.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I would go back to even like locally an example, I think, would be a Jonathan Smith or a Chip Kelly, right? Like Chip Kelly got Oregon to a level where their roster talent wasn't supposed to be at. And I think Jonathan Smith did the same.
The
I think Jonathan Smith never recruited 4- and 5-star guys, and he was having them win them 10 games at the end of it.
Right.
And I know it didn't go well for him at Michigan State, but that's an example of what coaching can do for you in football.
In football, it's much different.
If you have an idiot calling the plays and not, you know, running the show with what they had roster-wise at either of those spots at those times, you're not reaching a national title game or winning 10-plus games.
So take, what's the Vegas guy's name? Tortorella?
Yeah.
Yeah, John Tortorella.
Tortorella?
Torts.
Yeah.
Torts. Just call him Torts.
Why did you laugh? I thought I guess that right.
It felt like you were going to go with a tortellini there. I don't know. The way you were saying it was a little slow. Oh, I thought there was a leany coming at the end.
I
love tortellini.
Good vodka sauce with it.
Oh, who doesn't love tortellini?
But I'm just saying, they could win the cup, and then next year they could start out and
get fired. After a month, if they're losing, he's going to get fired.
And they're not going to hesitate on that.
No, that's the way hockey teams operate.
In football, like you see a guy that has it or he doesn't have it. And some guys are debatable because maybe they haven't reached the height of the expectation. But in all these sports, they're so similar. Of like, I heard Timber fan was chanting fire Neville.
Yeah, Saturday.
How about you fire the general manager? Your roster is embarrassingly bad right now.
Yeah, it seems to be a bigger issue for you.
In the NBA, it's the same way. Like, it's Jeff Van Gundy, it's Thiago Splitter, is it Tyler Lethbridge? How about none of it matters if your roster doesn't change over? How about you focus on the roster?
What's the South Park guy that needs help walking? What's his character's name?
Oh.
That's where I was going mentally with that one. Yeah.
But it's kind of, that's how I view
it. About the Blazer coach.
Well, that's
right
kind of how I view the sports fans here. It's like, I'm not telling you don't have evidence to point to a guy
not being perfect.
Right. But these are all sports that are Jimmy's and Joe's driven. And instead of like doing fire the coach, how about, hippie, make a tree. Make a big old super sweet tree. Like, focus on actual stuff that matters here instead of debating if Lashbrook or Jeff Van Gundy or Phil Neville and Tyler Neville or Bill Neville. I don't know what Neville is.
All
the
Neville
brothers.
Aaron Neville. Yeah, all the Neville brothers.
I mean, damn it, dude.
Man,
whatever
tough,
Neville it takes, figure it out.
For
but
the Neville bros.
It's a roster-based sport.
Yeah.
So why are we chanting fire the coach?
It's a great question, Bob. It's a great question. I've never quite understood it, and I go back to multiple examples in my fandom. Outside, football's the one that will always kind of stand out because I feel like it's easier in football to connect
the 1A
to 1B.
Yes,
you know,
I've always felt that way.
Like Mark Helfrich, it was pretty easy to call for him to get fired of like, this is clearly not going. It was here. Now it's here. You're the man in charge.
Pretty easy to see
that
line.
This is pretty obvious.
Yeah.
And in every other case, I will never understand the idea of keeping a general manager and firing a head coach. I will never, as if you can bring somebody in that will call X's and O's plays and overcome the roster shortcomings that you have.
The only way that makes sense is if there's something internally in the locker room where there's a schism between the players and the coach for whatever reason, whether it's
they're not listening to him, they don't respect him,
Yeah.
I think hockey, I don't want to make this a whole just like other sport thing, but I think it's valid in our conversation. I think hockey and soccer are weirdly unique in this. There is a thing where if your locker room is out after one or two games, You can't recover from it.
That happened to Mike Johnston when he went, the Winterhawks coach or former coach, when he went to Pittsburgh.
Like,
that wasn't exact. I mean, I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but he goes, he takes over. It's Sidney Crosby's like this multi-cup champion.
Yeah.
And it just, it didn't quite gel.
It doesn't
jive. He didn't quite get the buy-in from the biggest guy, and then you get turfed, and then the interim guy, you know, ironically ended up winning a cup that year when he took over. And so it just, sometimes that's the way that it goes. You got to get buy-in from your biggest players.
Yeah, and so I think hockey and soccer uniquely are built to, like, my team had four managers this year. Swag, I think yours had three, right?
Three or four, yeah. And so finally, like, the last guy
found a way to win some
found
games.
A way to inspire them.
I don't know if he's good. I don't know if my guy is good, but he inspired them to play well in the final month. I don't know much of this X's and O's versus good vibes, dude.
Hey, yeah, you're doing
way
what
to
you
have
need
the
to
right
do.
Vibes here.
Yeah. Believe, put a sign up. Let's slap it.
Yeah. Basketball, you need a little more. I think baseball and basketball are unique of, like, you can replace the manager or coach, but it's not as simple as, like, oh, you've lost four games, you're fired.
Right.
It's a little more like, hey, it's been 3 months.
Let's wait this thing out a little bit. The season's going on for 9 months to begin with.
Yes.
So a three-month stretch is, let's get a bigger sample size, okay?
Right.
We still have 160 games to go.
Well, our apologies to Phil Neville. I think we got you fired.
R.I.P., Phil. I mean, he's not dead, but we miss you.
It was
It was the fan curse.
The Dirt and Sprague bump. We got Bryce Fisher.
Didn't make the cut.
We finished last.
Yeah.
And then Neville.
Wayne Tinkle. Don't forget the Tinkler.
Dude.
Anybody else we got canned?
We interviewed Terry Stotts.
We did. We loved Terry.
He eventually got canned.
Terry was a fan of the show.
Dude, we're 0-4 right now.
We've had Mike Johnston on the show. He got, you
we
know,
have.
Yeah. He had come on at one point.
We've had Jonathan on.
We did have Jonathan Smith on. We've had Lanning on. Oh, God. Don't you do it. Don't you take out my sweet prince.
Hold on.
Don't you do it.
Hold on tight.
Hold on to your butts.
All right. Back with more Dirt and Sprague. It's a Mail Sack Tuesday on Portland Sports Leader 105.1, The Fan. So a couple of funny things to point out. I was going to get some NFL notes. I'll leave those for you, Dirt. Some good NFL notes out there today. A Mail Sack Tuesday. Get to that in the final hour of the radio program. A couple funny observations, one of which is about my life, and the other is something that happened in sports. And so I'm going to kind of do a weird mashup segment here.
Love a good mashup.
So my mom has been going through a lot of, like, of her stuff in her house the last, like, 4 to 5 weeks. I've been going over there, and we've been trying to get rid of stuff.
Cleaning stuff out.
This is a
decluttering.
Woman. Yeah, this is a woman who grew up incredibly poor, didn't have stuff, and then finally gets to a point in her life where she makes money, she starts buying stuff.
You want stuff. Everybody wants stuff.
And now she's like, help me, I'm buried in stuff. And I'm like, great, let's get rid of your stuff. Well, one of those things was a Louis Vuitton fanny pack.
Okay.
Now, a really big size fanny pack, not a tiny one.
So a larger fanny
a
pack.
A larger
Louis
than normal
Vuitton.
Louis Vuitton, like a real Louis Vuitton.
Okay.
And she forgot she had it.
Is it Louis or Louis?
It's Louis Vuitton.
Louis Vuitton.
Yeah, Louis Vuitton.
Okay.
And so she goes, do you want this? My wife's like, no. And I go, give me that bad boy. I love a fanny pack. So I decided to bring my fanny pack to the beach this weekend.
Ooh, I think I saw a photo of this.
And I put it around my waist the first day, and it looked terrible. Yeah. I mean, it just looked embarrassing.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know what? We're going over
look.
The shoulder, strap, Indiana Jones style with the Louis.
Cool dad look.
Well, I've learned that because of my cheap nature and background, now people assume that when I'm wearing Louis, it's fake. So now I got people in the house I'm staying in accusing me of wearing
a fake Louis.
And not going, oh my God, you got a Louis Vuitton.
Yeah, you got to defend yourself.
You saw the guy in the back alley at Times Square.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Like, is that a Louis Vuitton or a Louis Vuitton?
I got a Rolex on here. I got a Rolex.
And I think that's the good thing about who I am is if you know me, you're going to think that's fake. You're not going to want to take that from me.
Dude, it's maybe the best part about New York, to be honest, is the fake stuff that you can buy.
Yeah.
Dude, it's like $10. You get a watch. It lasts like 4 months, but for 4 months, it looks like you're wearing a Rolex.
There you go.
That was the cool thing about Vietnam.
Now, if I was rocking the Louis Vuitton
Yeah, you'd look like Oswego.
Right.
Yeah.
But Bougie Brandon came out to play this week.
Nice. Bougie Brandon's out of the coast.
Yeah, Bougie Brandon.
Drinking his $9 lattes and his medium
Brandon
pizzas.
All summer long.
Yeah. Yeah, Bougie Brandon was feeling pretty good to the point where I was at Pelican because we were in Pacific City.
Yeah.
And as I was getting up leaving, a woman coincidentally behind me had a massive Louis bag.
Yes. Say Louis.
And I said,
oh baby.
I grabbed the Louis fanny pack and I go, nice bag. And she starts laughing out loud. She's like, oh, yeah, Louis V.
Louis!
And I just walked away like, ah, oh, look at me.
There you go.
Louis
V. Did your pinky start floating out when you were
branded.
Picking up the...
I did see this. It was on Instagram this weekend. And it was like, let's go back to the... What's that? Oh, okay. All right. That's a big fanny pack.
It is a big fanny pack. It's a little uncomfortable.
I'm also not going to make fun of it because I know my fanny pack days are right around the corner for me. Dude. You're around. I don't want 18 things. And we were walking around on Sunday. It was my father-in-law's birthday, so we went to go get a coffee and walk around.
Yeah.
The second we leave my in-law's house, the wife turns to me and says, can you hold on to my phone?
Oh,
and I'm like,
it is. Now your pockets
wearing,
are full.
My shorts are not like... Now
your shorts are being
pulled
down a little
bit. My shorts are falling down.
Yeah.
Now I got to tie them tighter.
Yep.
So I know the fanny pack days aren't that far off.
It's a clutch item. We make fun of it, but I'm pro fanny pack. The Louis one is at least big enough, but Bougie Brandon came out to play.
Bougie Brandon, baby.
Bougie Brandon is here. And I thought that was maybe the funniest thing I'd experienced or seen all weekend. And then when I got home, I saw a video of the Houston Astros jumping up and down celebrating a combined no-hitter, and I started laughing out loud. And I said,
to tell you how meaningless that is, I didn't even see that they had a combined no-hitter.
They did it yesterday against the Rangers.
Yeah.
In fact, it was the funniest combined no-hitter because it was a delayed no-hitter. The final pitch was challenged. So instead of final pitch, oh, we did it! It's
yeah!
final pitch. Wait.
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 Oh, we did it!
It's a no-hitter!
And it's like five of them jumping up and down, and Texas fans like, good.
Yeah, that's congrats
job.
On that. I mean, that's cool that you guys did that, but...
Well, Astros fans haven't had much to cheer about
this year. I mean, they're on
their
win streak right now.
Look, yeah,
they haven't won four in a row.
Their last, let's not act like outside of cheating, the last 10 years have been very solid to the Houston Astros.
It's been great.
The idea of a combined no-hitter. I don't even know. I mean, you cheer after your team wins a game if you're there
but
in person.
This is never, even in the era of no-hitters being a thing that people cared about, which is a weirdly sad thing to me in sports because I'm one of these people that doesn't care.
See, I still will maintain it depends on who does it. If Paul Skenes throws a no-hitter, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Not massive,
but,
it's a deal.
I'm not surprised by it. Like, that's the thing about the no-hitter is it used to catch you off guard, and now I got this Mizorowski guy. He's like throwing
just 108. Just pumping 108,
dude. Yeah, pumping 108, and I'm like, oh, he threw a no-hitter? Yeah, nobody can hit that. I totally get it.
Yeah.
The combined no-hitter, even in the era of no-hitters mattering, never mattered.
No.
Nobody celebrated it.
No.
It was a weird thing to celebrate.
It's not a thing you remember. It doesn't go down. It shouldn't, at least on your.
But
I mean, maybe it does in the team history books, but damn.
Having witnessed one in person thrown against my team,
you did, Mariners.
There's nothing worse feeling
than
watching
no-hit.
Your team on a
combined no-hitter.
If Mizorowski comes out and
he's
throwing 105 and strikes out 18, you shrug your shoulders and go,
what are you going
to
do?
But five different guys coming out to do it, and you're like, nobody can get
six
hit off any of them?
Six different Mariners
righty,
out, roll right. out there, and you can't scratch out a hit?
Sidearm, underarm, overarm.
Yeah, yeah, but it's a weird thing of like, that guy pitched for an inning in a third. That guy pitched for two innings in a third.
And this guy makes his major league debut and closes you out.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, but I don't know. It's a weird thing where I'm like, is this?
It's pretty meaningless in modern accomplishments. Yeah. It's pretty meaningless.
The combined no hitter, like, sounds good in theory, but really, it's more about the other team being futile than the pitching staff dominating them. Unless they combine to like strike out 23 dudes.
I feel like I'm making more fun of the other team than I am crediting the team who did it. It's more of like Jesus, how did you let that happen to you?
If Skenes or Mizorowski
or
Ohtani or somebody just is got you baffled all day, then whatever.
Okay, there were total Ks. Give me a second here. There were four.
Exactly.
Four pitchers?
Four Ks.
Only four strikeouts?
The Rangers only struck out four times.
That also tells you that there's a massive element of luck involved. Because if you're putting the ball in play that many times, brutally bad luck day.
The Rangers also 24 and 28 going into this game. They suck.
If
the
Some Mariners, people would think 24 and 28 is a good record.
If the Mariners...
Some of us would argue
Well, in
that.
The AOS, it's a good
it
record.
It is. The Mariners beat the Athletics today, the entire division will be sub 500.
Shoot him to the sun, dude. You're
not
allowed in the
terrible.
Playoffs this year. It's
That's
not happening.
So bad.
See, my outfield brought back the Key and Peele skit.
Oh, they're doing it.
They did it even worse this time.
Aggressively pumping.
Which I don't mind. Like, we're terrible this year, so give me something to laugh about. And they had two guys get down on their knees, and one guy, I know. right? And one guy pumped. Long pause.
Hold on.
Pump again.
What?
Even longer pause. Third pump. It wasn't yesterday because they got killed yesterday by Arizona. It would have been Sunday's game. Sunday's game. I don't even know who they're playing this week.
You know, there's a couple people.
Oh, they're evaluating. Yeah, except when you say when two guys get down on the knees.
They got down on their knees, did they not?
He pumps them as if he's shooting them in the face.
Yeah.
And then they fall backwards.
Yeah.
No, I'm just telling you what he looks like.
That's,
he pumps, and one guy goes down on his back.
There's, you know, there's a couple of suits at the major league front offices.
Giants fans are split on it because they're terrible, so you shouldn't
kind
be having
of embarrassing,
fun. But
it's also kind of funny.
Yes, it's a
weird
mixture.
Place to be.
I'm embarrassed and laughing.
Do you know how many middle school boys in San Francisco are going to be doing this in the hallway?
Ooh. Ooh.
Billy, get off your knees!
It's like us
Jimmy,
back in the day doing the
don't
suck
do that again.
Walking around sixth grade. Suck.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Everybody.
Who wasn't doing that?
Everybody was.
You were doing flyby suckets.
Yes.
Bam!
Down the hallway. That was a greeting for sixth graders.
You had to do them to the right teachers, though. The wrong teacher, you're going to the office.
Back
the
in
right teacher,
man.
He's like, I'm going to get you back with the dodgeball. Don't worry.
P.E.'s
it's coming back.
P.E.'s after lunch, buddy, and I'm coming for you.
Combined no-hitters.
Pretty meaningless.
At just the celebration, as if they won the World Series.
Calm down,
all five
Houston.
Of you, calm down.
Yay!
On an ABS challenge. A lot to get to in the third and fourth hours of the radio program. We will get to the mail sack coming up in the old final hour. So get your mail sack questions in to 503-864-6326.
Mail sack!
Brought to you by Sparta TRT. A lot of NFL notes on the docket as well. Hour number three and four ahead on 105.1 The Fan.